So we're on Daf Yudalet Amid Beis, and we started the sugya of Itmar, and we sort of stopped a little bit in the middle of the sugya. So let's go back to the beginning of the sugya. And Itmar is approximately, if anyone could help me count the lines, in a standard Bavli Gemara, it's about, I would say, 12 lines down from the top, maybe 15 lines down from the top. On Daf Yudalet Amid Beis. So you'll see Amar Lo Aleph Lamed at the beginning of the line, and then if your finger moves across the line, you'll see the word Itmar. So how many people on this in this wonderful group have the place? So we know we're all.
I have the place.
I have.
Yeah, George, can you find it? Do you have a Gemara Bava Metzia?
No, I'll just listen.
All right, you'll listen. Okay, fine. So the Gemara is going to now quote Rav Nachman in the name of Shmuel, and he wants to know the following. What we have is a case of ribis derabanan. It looks like he's taking interest. What's the case where he's not really taking interest, but it looks like he's taking interest? I mean, you might ask, well, mimanafshach, either he's taking usury or he's not. So, but the case is where someone actually sold a stolen piece of property, and the buyer paid full price for this real estate. Till they found out that this real estate doesn't belong to the seller, to the mocher, belongs to the nigzal from whom it was stolen. The nigzal comes to the lokeach, to the buyer, and he takes away his karka, rightfully so, it's his. The lokeach then turns back to the mocher, and he says, "You no good thief, you have to pay me back the sales price that I paid for a stolen piece of property." But not only that, he wants to sue the seller for additional fees because he invested in this karka. The karka went up in value, so why should I only get back the sales price if as a result of my work, you know, I fertilized the karka, I built fences around the land, you know, I spent a lot of money, and now the land went up in value, and as a result of the increment in value, I'd like you to pay me back not only to return the sales price that I pay you, but to return the shevach, the additional improvement in the value of the karka. So Rav Nachman says in the name of Shmuel, no, that there's no way that halacha could force, we cannot force the mocher, the seller, to pay the additional element, that X amount of what we call shevach. And the reason why we can't accept that is because it looks like ribis. Why? Because the lokeach, when he bought the karka, he paid X, let's say he paid 100, and now he's getting back for that money X plus Y. He's getting back not only 100, but he's getting back 110. Now keep in mind, that's not ribis really, because the extra 10 is not being paid because the mocher is paying him extra money for using his money. The claim of the lokeach for that extra money is based on the fact that the karka improved, and he wants to be reimbursed for the what he thought was a valid sale. You know, he didn't realize that he was buying stolen property, and he should be paid for that shvach, for that improvement as well. So that's not really ribis. But Rav Nachman says in the name of Shmuel, it looks like ribis. It has a bad odor. It smells like ribis. Why? Because the money really was just given over to the mocher, and now the lokeach wants to get back his money. So the mocher was really, in effect, holding on to this money, as Rashi says, begetter milva. It was like money that he was holding on to someone else's money. In other words, you and I know that he got that money as a sale, and now he's buying back what he sold in order to pay back the nigzal. But it looks as if he's holding on to someone else's money, which is called milva. milva means that I can't pay you back more than the money I got from you. And here he's paying him back more than the money he got from you. So that's going to be this Gemara of Itmar. Itmar, Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Shmuel, Mos, Yeshlo, Shvach, Einlo. Which means that the buyer who purchased stolen property has recourse to get back the money he paid for it, but not, he has no recourse to get back the compensation for all the improvements that he put into the karka. And afal pisha perish lo es hashvach, even if the mocher, the seller, this no good gazlan, when he stipulated that he would make good for this sale totally, even if there's an increase in the value, despite his stipulation, he doesn't have to pay that money. Now, that's unusual in Choshen Mishpat and laws of money. If I take upon myself a commitment to pay you, then the halacha generally recognizes that commitment, and I would have to pay you. So if the seller says I'm responsible, not only for the value of this price, excuse me, the sales price that you're paying me, but I also am responsible for any improvements you make in the karka, that should be legally binding, that's written up in the contract and signed and sealed, my timer, but why is this not acceptable? And the answer is, kevan de karka einlo, since the mocher has no karka, so why is he holding on to someone else's money? He couldn't have possibly, in a legal context, have sold that karka. It's stolen karka. So why is he holding on to money? And basically, he's holding on to someone else's money, and that's it. And now he's paying back more money than what he got. Ischar ma'osav omed v'notel. It looks like, it appears like, he, the seller, is paying back more than the money that he got, as if to say he's paying for the use of his money. Whenever I pay you extra for the use of your money, that's a violation of ribbis. And this looks like ribbis. Eisvei Ravel Rav Nachman. This is where we got up to last time. And Rava now quotes a Mishnah in Gittin, and on this list of the Mishnah in Gittin, we have something called Schar Karkos. And, I'm sorry, we have something called Shvach Karkos. Because the Mishnah says, Ein motziin l'achilas peros l'shvach karkos l'mozon l'yishav abonos minuchosim mishubadim v'pnei tikun olam. What that means is that when a buyer is responsible to back up a chov, some sort of a debt. Now, why does a buyer have to back up a debt? Why does the buyer have to be on the line here for the seller? The seller has a debt, and the seller defaults on his debt, and his bal chov, his creditor, if you will, comes to collect from this. Lover, who's also a mocher, and he says, well, the lover turns his pockets inside out. He has no money to pay to the creditor. And now the creditor has recourse to collect from karka that was sold. And the reason for that is because of shibud, which means that anytime that you borrow money, your land now becomes leaned to back up that loan, which means that the buyer, unfortunately for him, is going to have to cough up that piece of real estate because there was a lien on that real estate. However, the Mishnah says there's a limit to the extent of the culpability, so to speak, or the security that the lokeach has. In other words, if you're going to make it such that the lokeach, when he buys karka, he has to pay for who knows what, then he's going to be very inhibited to buy karka. So the Rabbanan made a takana, and they sort of limited his responsibility. They limited the shibut. And they said, for example, that if the mocher, produces fruits, produce on this karka, then the produce is his. He doesn't have to fork that over to the creditor of the mocher. That's not within the purview of the shibud. That's called Achilas Peros. Then we have a case of Mazon Isha Vabonos. Let's say that this seller divorces his wife, and now she comes to claim from the estate her Mizonos, her support. She cannot claim her support from the Mocher, that person who, the Lokeach, I'm sorry, not the Mocher, the Lokeach, who bought the karka of her husband. And all this is a takonis chachamim in order to protect the lokeach, that the lokeach should be able to purchase property and have a limited kind of a responsibility vis-a-vis the mocher. So certain areas which, according to the strict letter of the law, the lokeach would be responsible for in the context of the lien on this karka that he's buying, but nevertheless they absolved him and alleviated him of those responsibilities because it's too much. It's unlimited. You know, if you talk about, Mazon Isha, I mean, there's no way that the lokeach, when he purchases karka, could be held responsible for this unlimited, open-ended, let's call it open-ended obligation to back up the mazon of Isha Ubanos. And all this is called Tikkun Olam. Now, what does this mean? So Rava analyzes this Mishnah, and he says the following, that the Mishnah says, Mimishabde, which means from the lokeach who purchases karka, hu delo mafkinon. We will not collect from the lokeach for these enumerated obligations and debts of the mocher. Hami bnei chorin. However, from the mocher himself, we could collect. That's called bnei chorin. Mafkinon, we do collect. Uketani Mia, and on the list of things that we do collect from the mocher, it says Shvach Karkos, which means that the mocher is going to be responsible to pay for the improvement of the land. Now, what's exactly the case? That the mocher himself has to pay for the improvement of the land. My love, shouldn't we assume that it's the following case below Kach mi Gazlan, that the seller had stolen this karka and he sold it to the buyer, the Lokeach, and now the Lokeach has recourse to collect from the Gazlan, the Mocher himself. That's called Bnei Chorin. And it says Shvach Karkos, which means the improvement of the land. It must mean that the Mishnah is not worried about ribis. The Mishnah is not worried about the fact that the mocher is now going to pay to the lokech above and beyond the sales price. He's going to pay also for shvach. And that's against Rav Nachman, because Rav Nachman says that the seller does not have to pay for shvach in the case where he sold stolen karka, because that would look like ribis. So the Gemara answers, lo. That's not the case of the Mishnah, but rather the case is a balchov, which means that the mocher owes a debt. He owes a debt, and he defaults on the debt. His balchov, which in English is called, fancy English, called the creditor. The creditor now comes to collect. So there are certain things that the creditor is not able to collect from the lokeach because of this tikkun olam that limits the lien on his property. One of the things that we're not going to let the balchov collect from the lokeach is shvach karkos, which means that if the lokeach improved the karka, so that value, which we'll call Y, that's above X, the original price of the karka, that Y could not be collected by the creditor. In other words, the balchov of the mocher does not have rights to force the lokeach to pay up for that which he improved in the karka. That which he improved in the karka is beyond his shibu to the balchov. But now the Mishnah is implying that as far as the Bnei Chori are concerned, meaning if this mocher has property in his own possession, then he will have to be responsible for shvach. What does that mean? That when the balchov comes and confiscates the karka from the lokeach, then the lokeach has recourse to get his money back from the mocher. That's called mechira b'achrayus, and that achrayus of the responsibility of the mocher includes even the shvach. So that if this karka went up in value, let's say from 100 to 110, then the lokeach has rights to claim from the mocher not just the 100, but the 100 of 10. That's called b'nei chori. And the reason for that is that's not mechzeik ribis. That doesn't look like ribis at all, because basically what the mocher is doing is, after the sale is valid, he's now coming to buy back the field from the lokeach, and he has to buy it back at a higher price than what he sold it for. So when he sold it to the lokeach, it was only worth 100. Now he's buying it back from the lokeach in order to pay up his creditor, and he's going to buy it back at the present price, and the present price is 110. And that's not mechzei karibis. That's just a regular mechira. I can sell you a piece of karka, and then I decide later on I want to buy it back from you for whatever reason. I'm going to have to buy it back at a higher price. So it's true that the lokech is getting back more money than what he paid, but he's not getting paid for the money itself. He's getting paid for the mechira, for the sale of this karka, because now the karka has a higher value. So this is the way that Rav Nachman could defend himself against the proof that Rava deduces from the Mishnah in Gittin. And now the Gemara objects. Ibe Balchov, if we're talking about a mocher who owes a debt, Emor Resha, let's take a look at the first part of the Mishnah. The first part of the Mishnah says, Ein Motzin Lachilas Peros. And we're talking about a case where the lokeach purchased karka, and then there's fruits or grains that are growing on the karka. And now the Mishnah is saying that there's no collection from Mishubadim, meaning the lokeach is not responsible to fork over these fruits to the balchov of the mocher. That's if you assume that we're talking about a balchov. But that couldn't be. Why? Because even balchov mi islay peri, these fruits are fully ripened, and fully ripened fruits have the status of what's called metaltalin, even though you haven't harvested yet. But kol omeid li batzer kibitzurim dami, it's as if they were disconnected from the karka, even though physically they're still growing on the karka, but they're not growing from the karka because they've reached their full maturity. Therefore, the balchov has no rights to collect from mishubadim, not because of tikkun olam, but because he only has rights to collect real estate that's leaned. He doesn't have rights to collect from movables. Like, so I'll give you an example. Let's say I would sell you a diamond ring. And now my creditor comes along. I don't have money to pay the debt. He goes to the lokeach and he says, "Well, give me that diamond ring." No. He has no rights to a diamond ring because a diamond ring is not included in shibudim. Shibudim liens, L-I-E-N, right? That only applies to karka. There's no such thing as a lien on metaltalin. So therefore, the Mishnah in Gittin could not be referring to a balchov, because balchov mi islay peri, a balchov never collects peros, That's metaltalin. That's not included in the purview of shibudim. Ve'omar Shmuel. And Shmuel made a statement that Balchov gove es ha-shvach. Shvach in. Avol peros lo. Just one second. So again, Shmuel was quoted as saying that a Balchov could collect shvach. That means shvach means the value of the karka that it went up, but peros lo, but certainly he doesn't have a right to collect peros, because as we said before, peros is not inherent in the karka. It doesn't have the status of karka, but rather it has the status of metaltalin. Elapshita, says the Gemara, by definition, by default, we must be talking about a case of gozel v'nigzal. It must be a case of someone who sells stolen land. And if that be the case, we can prove that as far as B'nai Chorin is concerned, the lokeach has recourse to collect shvach from the gazlan who sold him the karka. Again, he has no relationship to Mishubadim, but as far as B'nai Chorin, umi the reisha begozel v'nigzal, if the reisha in the case of Achilas Peros is talking about a case of a gozel v'nigzal, is then seifa nami begozel v'nigzal, the seifa would likewise have to be in a case of gozel v'nigzal, and this would contradict Rav Nachman. So where it says midi ar iria, is that really a valid claim? Is hakidisa of hakidisa? It means that the reisha is talking about a case of malchov, and that doesn't prove. I'm sorry. Let me say it again. The Reish is talking about a case of a gazlan and an nigzal. That doesn't prove anything about the Sefer. The Sefer might be a case of a Balchov. So the Gemara now rejects Rav Nachman and says, Valo Toni Hachi. I have a brisa that embellishes that Mishnah in Gittin. L'shvach Karkos Ketza. The brisa asks, what is the case of Shvach Karkos? Haresha Gazal Sodom Echavero. Varehi yotze mitachas yodo is kshugove gove esakeren minachosim mishubadim ushvach gove minachosim b'nechorin. Now, Rabosai, this brisa is a very, very strange brisa. If you read it literally, then it makes no sense. Why? Because the brisa says that someone stole karka, and now the karka is being taken away from him, and kshugove, and he wants to collect for the fact that this karka was being taken away from him, you know, to replace the loss of the karka that's now being confiscated. Well, that doesn't make any sense, because he's a robber, he's a no good thief. How could he claim compensation for a stolen karka? Hechi dummy. What's the case? Ile Mekidiktani, if you take it literally, that it's the Gazlan himself who is claiming compensation. Is Gazlan Miman Govi? Who can he demand compensation for? You know, he can't demand compensation for the Nigzal because he owes the Nigzal the karka that he stole from him. He can't claim any compensation from the buyer because he stole the money of the buyer. Ella, by process of elimination, lav, it must be a case of kigon shegozal sodomi chavero, umechara liacher vihishbicha. So he sold the karka to his friend. It's not really his friend if he stole it to him, but anyway, to another Jew, right? He sold stolen karka. And umechara liacher, right? Kigon shegozal son mechaver umechara liacher. So he stole a piece of karka and he sold it. Vishbicha, and the buyer improved the land. Now, the buyer now purchased stolen karka. He wants to get compensation from the seller for selling him stolen karka. In the meantime, the buyer, had improved the land, and he's now claiming from the seller that I would like to be compensated not just for the price, the sales price that I purchased the land for, but also for the improvements that I made. The karka went up in its value. And the Braisa says that in this case, it says kshu gove, gove sakeren min chasim ishubadim, ushvach gove min chasim b'nei chorin, that he can collect the sales price from the seller, who is the gazlan, or from a buyer who purchased karka subsequent to the sale. Right, there are two buyers now. There's buyer number one, he purchased stolen property. Then there's buyer number two, who purchased with a valid sale. Buyer number one has recourse to collect his sales price from buyer number two. That's called keren. But as far as the shvach is concerned, he can't go to buyer number two to collect from shvach because of the takana of the Mishnah called tikkun olam. But as far as the mocher is concerned, as far as the seller is concerned, the gazlan, that's already b'nei chorin. And the mocher would have to pay the lokeach, if he sold him stolen goods, not just the sales price, but also the improvement of the property. And that's against Rav Nachman. Amalei, Rav Nachman says to Rava, wait a minute, lo lav tirutzi kometaritz, in other words, you already admit that this brisa is very ambiguous. You had to reinterpret the brisa in order to make any sense out of the brisa. If that be the case, tritznami bibalcho. Why do I have to assume that once you reinterpret the brisa and you're asking for compensation, and who's asking for compensation? You're talking about the Blokeach who bought it from a gazlan, he's the one who's asking for compensation. No, maybe we're referring not to stolen land, but to land that was leaned to a balchov. And the balchov is now coming to collect from the lekuchos, right? He who purchased land from the love, and he can only collect from the lekuchos for the sales price. And that's called the value of the karka. The keren is called the keren, but he cannot collect shvach. He cannot collect for the improvements that the mocher improved the value of the karka. But right, so that's called kshugove gove esa keren mi'nechasim mishubadim. And gove ushvach gove minichasim bnei chorin, which means that if the mocher has money in his possession, or let's call it money in the possession, and that money will cover not only the sales price but also the shvach, and when he sold his karka, he took upon himself a shibud not only on the karka but also on the shvach. That's b'nei chorin, and that has to be paid by the mocher to the lokeach. As far as the balchov is concerned, his rights are limited to keren, and he cannot collect shvach. But basically, the thesis is that Rav Nachman says you, Rava, had to reinterpret the brisa. So who says the brisa is talking about a case of a gozel and a nigzal? Maybe it's talking about a case of a balchov. Toshma. Now Rava is going to bring another brisa, which again is an embellishment of the Mishnah in Gittin, and from that brisa he's going to disprove the shita of Rav Nachman. Toshma, the brisa says, Lachilas Peros Ketzad, the first case on the list that was enumerated of cases in which, according to the Mishnah in Gittin, there's a limit to how much you can collect from the lokeach, and that limit excludes achilas peros by virtue of tikkun olam. And the Braisa says, what's the case of achilas peros? Haresha gazal sada michavero, right? He stole a field, varei hu yotze mitachas yodo, Now the field is being confiscated by the nigzal from the lokeach, shugove, when the lokeach now has recourse to collect compensation for the fact that he bought a stolen field, is goves akeren minachasim mishubadim, uperos gove minachasim minachorin. He has rights to collect the peros from, he has rights to collect the peros, just 1 second. So what happened? The Goslin stole a field, and he sold it. And now the Nigzal wants to get reimbursed for his loss. So the Brisa says that when he collects for these for this loss, he can collect from Bnei Chori. He could collect from the Goslin. He can collect from the Goslin. So the Gemara says, "Hey Chidomi, what's the case? Ilei Mekiriktani." Once again, there has to be some sort of reinterpretation of this brisa, because again, the brisa says, "Hare shegazal soda michavero, varehi yotze mitachas yodo." Right. So now the rightful owner is confiscating the karka from the hands of the gazlan, and kshugove. What do you mean kshugove? Who's collecting here? I mean, the Goslin can't be the one who's collecting. He stole the property. Goslin iman govi. Ella, but rather we have to reinterpret this price. Lav, isn't it a case? Kigon she gozal soda michavero. He stole a field from his friend. Umechar aliacher, and he sold it. Vishbicha, and the buyer improved the land. And the buyer improved the land, and now the buyer wants compensation. So he claims compensation from the mocher. The mocher sold him stolen karka. Correct? And it says that the lokeach has rights to collect the peros from Bnei Chorin. Right? It says in the Brisa, Shugove, Goves HaKeren Minachasim Mishubadim Uperos Gove. Right? Just 1 second. Just give me a second, sorry. He came to the organization of this. So the purchase. Wait. I'm sorry. I need 1 minute. I'm sorry. I lost the. So now the lokeach is claiming that he wants to be paid from the mocher, right? From the mocher for what? For not only the money that he paid for the karka, but also he wants to be paid for what? For the peros. Correct. He wants to be paid for the peros, right? So now it says that, oh, excellent. So now it says that the seller, who's the ganav, he has to pay the mocher not only for the keren, but also for the peros. Now, if he's paying for the peros, which were produced by the lokeach, he is paying the lokeach more money than the money that he got from the lokeach. And according to Rav Nachman, that's a no-no, because that's a case of ribis. Do we have it? Any questions on that? Should I go over that, or we have that?
No, it's clear.
Okay. Not sure if you're saying that, you know. Okay. So that what happens now is that the lokeach is going to get reimbursed not only for the sales price, but also for the shvach. And again, now it's not shvach; it's called peros. But again, peros increases the value that he's getting back above and beyond the sales price that he paid. And therefore, this irritates Rav Nachman, because Rav Nachman held that in the case where the lokech is getting more money back than what he paid, that's already looks like rivis. How can we allow him to collect the peros? Now, mimeshubadim, he does not have the right to collect peros, which means, as we said before, if there were two sales, sale number one at the beginning of the month was a sale of stolen property, and then later in the month, this same Gazlan sold a piece of property with a valid sale. That buyer is now Mishubad, he has a lien to the first buyer. Correct? But that first buyer has no right to collect the value of the peros from the second buyer, and that's because of the Tikkun Olam of the Mishnah Gittin. But he does have recourse to collect the peros from the mocher. Again, when I say the peros, I mean the value of the peros. And the peros themselves will be taken with the karka back to its rightful owner, but he has rights to compensation for the value of the peros, which means that the mocher is going to pay the lokeach not 100, but 110. Omar Rava, so this is really interesting, that Rava himself comes to defend Rav Nachman, even though he was the Makshin who came to slug up Rav Nachman. Hocha b'mayas kinon, what's the case? Kigon shegozal sode mechavero melea peros. At the time of the gzela, the land was full of produce. And then the ochal es haperos, the gazlan ate up all the fruit, and not only that, to add insult to injury, chofar bo boros sichnemoros, and he damaged the field. He dug ditches in the field, and that depreciates the market value of the field. Ba nigzal ligvos keren. When the Nigzal comes and he wants to collect the value of the field, now watch what happens over here. What is the value of the field? Well, there was a certain value at the time that it was stolen, but now it's worth less because the Gazlan damage the field. So the field now goes down from 100 to 90. So he can collect keren, the full value of the field, from the gazlan. But let's say the gazlan has no money to pay him. Just one second. Oh, so again, when we say the full value of the field, we're talking about 100. The value of the field as it was valued at the time of the theft, which means before it was damaged, before it depreciated, and that he has rights to collect from the gazlan. Now, if the gazlan has no money, but the gazlan has subsequently sold his a different field to a second buyer, that's called mishubadim, is goveh Minachasim Mishubadim. Just one second. Bonigs al Ligvos Keren. If he wants to collect the Keren, then he collect the Keren from the Nechasim Mishubadim. But Bonigs al Ligvos Peros, Gove Minachasim Bnei Chorin. Let's try to analyze this. So the Nigzal wants to get compensated. He had a field that was worth, let's say, A, B, and C. There are three variables. Number one is the price, the market price of the field before it was damaged. Number two, the buyer was going to pay, if he would sell it on the market, he would pay extra for the peros, because again, at the time of the theft, this karka was healthy and it had peros on it. So that's what he wants to collect. Now the Gazlan eats up the fruits. He cleans out all the produce. And not only that, he damages the field. Okay, the Nigzal now comes by and he wants to be compensated. He wants to return the karka that was stolen from him. Now, this karka was not only stolen, but it was also sold. It was also sold. So now we have a lokeach in the picture. Okay. So as far as the Nigzal's rights to be compensated from the Gazlan, that's called B'nai Chori, he can collect from the Gazlan the original value of the field plus the payros of the field, which the Gazlan... So in other words, the Gazlan is now going to have to not only pay the sales price of the field as it's worth today, but he has to add the value of the field with its payros and the value of the field without the damages of boros, sichin, and maoros. So those are the three variables that I spoke about, all of which are collectible from the Gazlan himself. But now let's assume the Gazlan is penniless. But in the meantime, in addition to selling... Right. So now he stole the field and he sold it. Correct? He sold the field. He sold the field. And now, just 1 second, now the Nigzal is coming to collect his field. Just 1 second. Is that the case? Just 1 second. I think I have to add something to this case over here, because it says Ba Nigzal is Gove Minachasim Mishubadim. Ah, that's what I think it is. That's what I think it is. The Nigzal wants to collect... He wants to collect the full value of his field. The full value of his field as it was stolen from him, and he wants to collect it from Mishubadim. So what happens is that... Just 1 second. The buyer who purchased the stolen field, right? Obviously, the field is going to be taken away from him because it's that Nigzal is coming to claim his own, but now he's getting a field without payros and a damaged, depreciated field. So now he's coming to collect from B'nai Chori. Just 1 second. B'nai Chori. So who are the B'nai Chori? These are the Lekuchos. Again, which Lokeach? Are we talking about the first Lokeach? Lekuchos, does that make any sense? Let's just see. The Lokeach himself. What happens over here? He's Meshubad. Now I'm trying to just work out in my mind whether it's this Lokeach himself who bought the stolen Karka, or it's another Lokeach who purchased subsequently Karka from this Mocher, this robber. What are we talking about now? And we say that he cannot collect from Mishubadim for the Peros. So I'm not sure. Give me just a minute to think about this. Just want to make sure I have this right, that is it a subsequent? Are we talking about a subsequent lokeach? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Bryce is talking about the Nigzal, and the Nigzal wants to collect from Mishubadim. So again, first of all, He collects the karka. Now, the impression I have, we have to go through the Rashi again very carefully, is that now the Nigzal wants to get recourse for not only the value of the karka, but for again two additional values, which means the original value of the karka, which had peros on it, and the original value of the karka, which was not damaged. Now, if the Gazlan sold karka subsequent to the Gneva, then guess what? Those buyers have a shibud as far as the depreciation of the karka resulting from the damage of Sichin Umoros. Apparently, that's already something that's public knowledge. So when they bought the karka from the Gazlan, they already knew that there was a lien on this karka to the tune of the full value of the karka as it was worth before the theft. We have to understand exactly how they knew about that. But what they cannot be held responsible for is for peros, which means that if, as we said before, the Gazlan consumes the peros, so that's not included in the shibud to the lekuchos. Why? Because those peros are considered metaltalin, and there's no shibud on metaltalin. So, Rabotai, just to summarize the general framework or shakavitarya here, what Rav is saying is that he's willing to interpret this brisa, which is again an embellishment of the Mishnah about achilas peros, in such a way that has nothing to do with nigzal and gazlan. We thought that the case was, we thought the case was what? Was that, one second, let me just go over this one more time. We thought the case was we thought the case was that after the Gazlan sold what? He sold the stolen karka. We thought that the Nigzal, right? We thought that the Lokeach is now going to collect from the Gazlan not only the price that he paid to the Gazlan, but also the peros, and that would violate the rule of Rav Nachman, because then the Gazlan is paying back more than the amount of money that he took, and the Lokeach is receiving more money than what he paid for, and that's Mixley Kir Ribis. No, says Rava, the case is not where the, whatchamacallit, where the Gazlan is going to pay more than what he stole from the Lokeach, but rather the Gazlan damaged the property that he stole. And if he damaged the property that he stole, then what we're saying is that the Nigzal has rights to collect from Shibudim to cover the loss that was due to the damage of the karka. And that's called Gove Minichasim Mishubadim Keren, because the Keren includes not only the value of the karka, but it also includes the damages. Why? Because that Keren reflects on the value of the field at the time of the Gzela. And there's a shibud. In other words, that's considered public knowledge, that the buyer realized that he is buying land that has a lien on it to the tune of the original value of the karka at the time that it was stolen. So therefore, the Meshubadim are collectible from Karen. Correct? From Karen. Now, as far as the Peros are concerned, the Nigzal has recourse to collect from Bnei Chorin, which means from the possessions of the Gazlan himself, but not from Mishubadim. So the Kuchos do not have to pay for Peros. Peros is already, as we said before, metaltalin. So as far as the Gazan is concerned, the Nigzal has rights to say, well, you destroyed my Peros, you have to pay me for those Peros. But as far as Mishubadim is concerned, there was never a Shibud vis-a-vis Peros, because those Peros are called metaltalin. So Eino Gove Beachilas Peros from Mishubadim, and that's the Tikkun Olam, he can only collect for the Achilas Peros from the Gazan himself. But that's not considered Mechse Karibis. That has nothing to do with Rav Nachman. Why? Because the collection of the Peros from the Gazan himself is Bitoras, let's call it a Mazik. I mean, he destroyed the Peros, he stole the Peros, he has to pay for Peros, Bitoras Gazlan. That has nothing to do with Ribis, obviously. So this Brisa, as it's being reinterpreted, has nothing whatsoever to do with Rav Nachman. So Rav Osai, here's where we're going to stop. If you could please make a note that what we got up to is the last line on the Amud, which is Rava Bar Rav Huna. Okay then, so now we'll learn a little bit of Yoredeya, but what we have to do is